This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to an iFanboy special edition podcast, Watchmen.
Now I've heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you? It goes like this: the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift. The baffled king composing hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.
Hello, and this is the iFanboy podcast that I think we've all been waiting for. We are going to talk about the Watchmen movie, which has just come out and has been seen. I am Josh.
I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And we're all here.
And this is the podcast they said that could never be recorded.
It's funny, Terry Gilliam was going to record this podcast.
But he had to go to dinner. So.
Yeah, and Sam Hamm had written out a whole outline of things that we would talk about. But that was not the case. At the time that we are recording this, we have all seen the Watchmen movie. It is before the actual release, so we don't know you know, anything else other than our opinions on the movie.
Right. We don't know box office performance. We don't know what you all think. We don't know. I don't even know what these guys think. We haven't talked about it. So
it's possible it's possible Zack Snyder has developed his own superpowers in the intervening time. I don't know.
So before we get into it, I was thinking about this on the way in. I was like, wow, this is great. A movie podcast where we don't have to worry about spoilers because everyone's read the book.
I would go so far.
Yeah, and then I realized, oh, that's silly. So we're to warn you, if you haven't seen the movie yet, you might want to go see it first before you listen to this. We don't want to spoil big things, and we're going to try not to, but it's kind of hard to talk about the movie without talking about specific things in it. So
I think we're going to have to. There's no way to talk about the end of the movie without talking about spoilers.
However, if read the book, not a big deal.
Yeah.
This is what I'm saying.
All right, so normally we kick the, so I don't even know where to start, where to begin.
we alluded to the long history. I mean, this is a film that's had such a long developmental history. They've been trying to make this for years. They said it could never be made. It's been made. And one thing that I noticed before we get to the movie, just the surrounding part of the movie, was that Josh and I went to a pre-screening of this, as Ron did, and we go to pre-screenings for all these superhero comic book films, and this was the one that was the most attended. Like,
it was a clusterfuck.
When we went to Batman, The Dark Knight, which is one of the most anticipated films of last year and the second biggest film of all time, the theater was half empty.
Remember when we saw Hulk, Connor? It was just us and Gene Shalit.
This was...
I'm not even joking.
This was like in the biggest theater, the biggest screen in the theater. It was two-tiered. It was packed at the gills. There was this gigantic clusterfuck line to get into the theater, and it was just like... I don't know what it is about Watchmen, because once this trailer hit, you know, it sold 300,000 copies, most of those to civilians, as Dave Gibbons likes to say. And I don't know what it is, but this movie is generating this crazy amount of heat. And when it was over, I turned to Josh and I said, I don't know what people are going to think about that.
I said, I agree. And I said, get your hand off me, you dirty jerk. That's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
No, and I was speaking specifically to the people who haven't read the book, don't know about the book. I mean, the people who have read the book, I mean, we're talking about adaptations. This was basically the book on screen.
Yeah, alterations. That was to say, not, you know, like my first reaction when I finished it was, and I actually Twittered it. I said I'm a little freaked out because I didn't feel like I just sat through a movie. I felt like I just read the book. that was the one thing, and I kind of share with you guys where I don't know what people are going to think about. I'm very curious to see what the general reaction is going to be to it.
I think the opening weekend is going to be really big because of all the hype, and then it'll be what's the reaction based off that. That'll be the really interesting thing. But into the movie now, it's funny because there's been a lot of arguing online about whether or not the movie should have been made and adaptations and how much of it's going to be changed. It's pretty close. I mean,
it's like 95%. It's like scarily close. There's a couple of things that deviate here and there, but like there were moments where I'm sitting in the movie, hearing the script being spoken, and I remember the panel that word balloon with those exact words were in.
Well, no, for the first hour, all of the dialogue was directly lifted.
Yeah, directly
from the page. Now that
once you get past the opening prologue, once you get into the actual film,
but basically the opening prologue sort of tells everything that happened in the past.
I don't want to get ahead of ourselves because that was, you know, because I don't want to talk about things that bugged us, or whatever. But that was.
But I'm gonna.
Yeah, but I'm gonna anyway. No, I'm not going to. the thing about it was is that. I found myself the few points that were deviations that I could identify, I did find myself cringing a little bit at the deviations, and I don't know why. It was like a visceral.
I'm guessing for me there was nothing bad, other than I thought most of those things were expedience based.
Yeah.
In order to get it somewhere faster or make it work with the movie, things had to be moved around a little bit. Which, you know, and literally the only reason I reacted to them at all was because it was different than what I had known.
Right.
I think for the most part. What was your first reaction after seeing the movie? I mean, Ron, you said you kind of...
I was freaked out. I was freaked out. I was really freaked out.
Connor?
I started wondering immediately what people were going to think. I liked it. It was good.
Yeah.
And it's funny because we talked to somebody at the WonderCon who said that... They looked at the movie clinically, and hadn't really had much of an emotional reaction to it, and they needed to see it again. And I sort of felt the same way. Well, like, I was looking at it,
yeah,
thinking, what's different? What's going to be changed? How does this work? Ooh, this scene's coming. And now I'm going to see it again with my brother, so it'll be interesting to get his reaction to it, but I might get more of a chance to sort of sit back and enjoy it as opposed to one, you know, cutting it apart in my head.
That exactly sums up how I felt at the end of it. Is that my initial reaction was I was freaked out, and then I turned to my friend who I saw it with, and I said, you know, I think I might be too close to this, you know, like, and I think that's the knowledge of the book that we have and reading it all these times is kind of clouding my judgment of it. The thing was is that I liked it it's a good movie. Zack Snyder is a good director. It looked great. It sounded great. It's a good movie. I liked it, but I walked away feeling weird.
Well, here's my reaction was that I thought I really have nothing bad to say.
Yep.
I don't have, like, you know, like, well, I don't like this or I didn't like this. Or I don't have any of those. But at the same time, I didn't feel terribly moved one way or another because it's slightly superfluous, I suppose. Like, and it was kind of neat, and my first instinct is to compare it to, like, when Gus Van Sant remade Psycho. I was like, that was kind of neat, but serves no purpose.
That's a very interesting analogy.
Well, it serves the purpose of giving the story to millions of people that would never ever get it.
No, that's fine for them, but to me personally, I didn't have much of a reaction to it because I'd seen it, and really my only sort of, I think, real satisfaction out of watching it came from, it was kind of cool to see some of that stuff done really well. Like the idea of what would happen if you could make this movie with a shitload of money and yep. support behind it, and a guy who really liked it. And I think, you know, this was the answer to that. For me, is it necessary? I don't know. If it's good for everybody else, you know, good for them.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing is that, like, we talk, you know, like, you know, talk about the movie being, you know, Zack Snyder being a director who, like, 300 was, we when it came out, we said it's the comic book brought to life. And
this makes that look like,
yes,
an auteur's journey of adaptation.
This is a literal translation of the book to the movie, like literal down to the minutest detail that you could look at, that you could capture when looking at the movie. And some of those things I'm both impressed and blown away by, and at the same time, like I said, I left being freaked out because I felt like, because the thing was is that, and here's the problem is that the book is heralded as, like, the greatest graphic novel of all time, and it's a deconstruction or whatever you want to call it of the comic book storytelling method and the 9-panel grid and all that kind of stuff, and that all what makes the book so great doesn't 100% translate to the movie. What translates to the movie is the story, is the characters, is some of the look and some of the feel.
Yeah.
But I really felt the genius of Dave Gibbons' art in this book lacking in the movie. You know, like there was, and maybe I need to see it again to capture it. But maybe there was no, you know, of the little subtle, you know, things like the symmetry and the organization of panels and things like that. All that gets lost because it's not the same medium, which I understand. I'm not saying I want that, but to me, I felt a sense of loss.
Well, the thing is this. The Watchmen is a book that I think can be enjoyed on multiple levels.
Yep.
Some people can enjoy it for some one thing. Some people can enjoy it for another. Some are both. There's a bunch of different things there. And, the thing is, what you're talking about is the aspects of it being a comic book. And,
yeah,
of course,
exactly.
Those aren't. So you go for the story, the message, I suppose, the moral of the whole thing, maybe.
Yep.
Yes.
So let's break down, what do we like?
Everything about it.
Everything about it?
I mean, there was, like Josh said, there's nothing really bad to say about it.
Well, I mean, let's not be crazy. I got a couple of nitpicks. But,
right.
Well, there's nothing bad about it.
Right, yes.
There's things I might have done differently, but there's nothing I could say, oh, that was a bad scene or a bad take. There was nothing bad about it.
Right.
I mean, you know what was the most fascinating part of the whole thing for me, and I think Connor will probably agree. I found myself wondering how much the audience knew about how much the audience had known going in.
Yes.
Because there was one moment of spontaneous and
raucous
group unison cheering, where everybody cheered at one point. Did they do this in your theater, Ron?
What scene was it? There was a couple. There was a couple of moments with audible audience reactions, both
no.
laughter and cheering. And
Everybody clapped and cheered at this at only one point during the whole movie, and it was in the prison dining room when Rorschach
says, same thing.
Not trapped in here with me. I'm not trapped in here with you. You're trapped in here with me.
Had the same audience reaction of applause. Yep.
I mean, at that moment, I will say that I would say probably my favorite part, because my favorite character is Rorschach. I mean, I think that translation of him into a thing of flesh was really quite amazing. Yeah. I'm actually amazed at how good that was. I mean, they went note for note and everything, but like, it all depends on the person doing it. Yeah. And he sold the shit out of that. I'm talking about Jackie Earl Haley, who sounds like an assassinator.
There's a lot of assassins in this movie, because Jeffrey Dean Morgan is the comedian. Like, he nailed the comedian, and
yes.
Oh, I absolutely. Oh, and my friend who I saw the movie with said that before I said, he is now, when I close my eyes and I read the book and I think of the comedian, it's that guy. He did it. And that's the thing, is that I think, and I went down the cast list, and I don't think there was a single member of the main cast, with the exception of maybe Adrian, who was a little bit of a Nancy boy, the casting was great, and every actor was amazing. I thought they were even. I mean, I was had a little trepidation about Silk Spectre. I thought she blew me away. I thought every role was cast so well, and each actor did such a good job for their individual characters.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is this: a lot of them can be played. I will say that it's not as hard to find a good comedian. You could probably think of a bunch of actors who did that. But when you think about the moments in the Watchmen book when they take the mask off Rorschach and what he looks like and what he acts like and how unique that is, and especially, you know, all the acting that has to be done from behind a mask.
Yeah. I'm not saying that Jackie Earle Haley didn't do a great job as Rorschach. He did an amazing job. But I think that it's not in the same way that Heath Ledger's being heralded for his portrayal of the Joker, and nobody else in Dark Knight got heralded for their acting. I think they're all really freaking good.
I think that there's a reason for that.
I mean,
lots of it was good, but that was the one that I was like, wow, that's quite amazing.
Yeah. No, I thought they were all equally amazing. They all blew me away.
Yeah, I don't agree with you.
Okay.
I don't think the one was bad, but some were more, you know, rote. I thought that Dan Dreiberg, you know, was pretty much doing what the script said, and it wasn't.
I thought he was a wonderfully nuanced performance.
Yeah, cool. So do I. Really subtle, yeah.
Yeah.
I was just bugged that he wasn't fat.
Well, he was a little dumpy. He was a little dumpy.
Dumpy. Yeah. They did all of the rest of it right, and it really got me wondering, and I have to assume that this is a rare moment of network interference or studio interference, where they must have been like, he can't be fat, because they let him do everything else.
Yeah.
And, you know what I mean? Like,
well,
it's
he's
just
a bit of a nerd, and he had the glasses and, you
no,
know,
he
and
was.
All,
he
yeah,
had
yeah.
the, he had the Clark Kent 1975 glasses.
Yeah. Yeah, no, so I thought they were great. And like I said, the story was note for note. Now, I mean, to get a little, the nitpicks are where it's at. That's what's more interesting, I think. But so to get where that is, I understand why the opening montage through the credits to bring us through the history happened. I just felt as if it revealed almost too much, like the little detail that the comedian was part of the Kennedy assassination was something that you find out way later in the book, and it was one of those things that blew my mind. And to see that so early kind of was like,
that's the structure having to be changed.
No, I understand that. I can still bitch about it, but I understand that.
In the same sense, like, and I understand why they did that, and I think that it was the right decision, but I was a little thrown off that the first shot in the movie wasn't the first shot in the book.
Me too.
Because that is so iconic.
Yeah.
But I get it.
And then related to that was the and this goes back to my comment about the comic and not being able to fully translate it to the movie, which I understand. But I thought that at some places the pacing was not what I expected, or the pacing was off, in terms that like, for example, we saw the entire comedian murder scene, the fight and everything, and that scene was way longer than I thought it was going to be. And I thought that made it lose a little bit of its mystery. In the book, it happens very fast, and actually is being recreated, you know, forensically and all that kind of deal, like in the investigation, Rorschach. You know,
that's much.
I'm sorry.
I think that happens much later in the book.
No, right, but early on in the book, you don't see him the whole fight and everything. And in the movie, you do. And it was like 5 minutes of a fight scene, which was a good fight scene, but it's like, I'm almost like, oh, I didn't want to see it. You know, I just want to see him get thrown out the window, and that's it.
That's because you're familiar with it. You got to distance yourself.
Yeah, possibly.
And I mean, you got to think about it clinically. If you're making a movie, how do you grab people right away?
Right, yeah. But I think the aspect of it being a mystery was a little lost because you saw the whole thing happen. So
it wasn't – still, you didn't know who it was until later.
Right, but the way that guy –
It's not like a mystery how he died. It's just he died. I mean,
the way the guy who killed him moved – you knew that it was, I don't know, at least in the book there was an air of not knowing who it was. So
I don't think anybody who hasn't read the book will have a clue.
Yeah,
because you know who the killer is. You know, you're already projecting onto the person in the scene.
Right.
Fighting in the movie was stylized.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
From everybody.
Yeah. And that was the other thing, like when Dan and what's-her-face, Sally, when they were in the alleyway. I'm sorry?
Lori.
Mom, Sally, right, Lori. When they're in the alleyway and they got into the fight with the gangs, I thought that fight scene was more brutal than it needed to be.
I was fine with
it. I disagree with that. Yeah.
Oh, really? Because of the bones going through the skin and she stabs somebody and all that kind of stuff. Like, I thought that was a little more violent than I expected. So
I think, but that's because you've been reading superhero comics your whole life where there's not really a whole lot of violence in them.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing if Alan Moore wrote that book today, you'd see more of that kind of thing.
Yeah,
I don't know. But I think that it fits with the world.
Yeah. And then my other thing was the and this isn't a nitpick or anything to the book or anything, but it was the sex scene with the Leonard.
That was
Cohen.
A sex scene.
That not only was that a sex scene, that was a sex scene that I felt like I was 12 watching an R-rated movie with my parents. I'm like, it's still going. It's still going. Oh, it's still going. Like it was.
Well, I was talking to Josh about this. This is a movie that people are really going to pay attention to. This is not a movie to bring your kids to.
Yeah, no, it's an R-rated movie. It's R. Yeah.
If they bring but they don't always pay attention to that. Sure, I remember going to see The Cable Guy, which is an R-rated movie, and people brought their kids because it was wacky Jim Carrey again,
right,
and they were horrified on the way out. But if they go and people go in expecting Batman, Superman, you're going to get. You're gonna get some
softcore
else.
Porn. That's what you're gonna get.
I was pretty shocked by that. That was the scene where I was like, "Wow, because it's so you're in a superhero world.
Yeah,
you're not used to them having to say fuck and shit and you're an asshole, and you're not used to seeing them rip their clothes off and go at it for 5 minutes, and you're not used to seeing a lot of stuff, which is interesting, which is the whole point of the movie and the book and the story.
Yeah.
But
I'm not gonna be wrong. I thought it was awesome. But
it's a disconnect in your head because you know, especially since the year of superhero films we just went through.
Yeah. Leonard Cohen?
I'll never be able to listen to Leonard Cohen the same way. It was like
I was like, Leonard Cohen?
By the way,
it's gonna take them at least the weekend to pay back the music budget.
Oh yeah, I thought the music was great because none of it was before 1985 and it all fit. It was great. I thought it was really good.
A lot of it was the stuff that was quoted in the book.
Yeah, exactly. Even better. There was
so much of it. Like paying for that stuff on an actual, I was like, wow, they're spending a shit ton of music
on the
money.
On the first notes of Hallelujah during the sex scene, and you can ask who I went with. I literally yelped. I leaned forward in my seat and went whoa, because I couldn't believe that they were using that song. It was crazy. It was really good.
One of the things that I felt would be a possible weakness for people is I felt that some of the dialogue and some of the stuff that Alan Moore had baked into it originally translated a little bit silly to the screen. Some of the dialogue, like, you know, the comedian is dead. You know, like those kind of lines, which work well in comic books, but.
Like,
and I think that Dan got saddled with a lot of those lines.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it kind of fits his character because he's the one who's into the whole tropes of being a superhero the most
of all
the people. Yeah. You know, so if you think about, like, he's the one who has the gadgets and the suits and he likes being the guy with his hands on his fists. Hands on his waist or hips. I can't think. It's late. But I can see what you're saying. There was a couple of sort of cringe moments, but
maybe that's what they need, for the civilians to like it. I don't know. Who knows?
No, see, I was thinking of the opposite because that dialogue, because they lifted so much of it directly from the comic book, and people in comic book don't necessarily they do now, but they didn't used to speak, you know, as naturally, as you would in life, and that's sort of the thing that you do in films and much more comic books now. Yeah. Some of it felt a little clunky. Now that might just be a way that. You know, you have to adjust. This world is a little askew from ours, and this is what, you know. And that, again, that might just be me.
Yeah.
To get back to the pacing thing, I did think about that during it because it does sort of go really slow for the first half, and then it kicks into gear. I found myself knowing the fact that there's another hour to come in the DVD, wondering like, what else is it like? Because
I never felt the length at all. I never felt
it didn't feel long, but I felt because
at one point I turned to Connor probably half an hour, 45 minutes in. I go, we're on page 8.
Yeah.
Like, this we're in trouble.
But I'm really curious to see now the longer version how much, because I think, you know, Ozymandias got a lot, got the short shrift.
Yeah,
you know?
Big time.
And, you know, there are a lot of stuff. There's a lot of embellishment that goes on that got missing from this, and I wonder how much of that is because I was able to fill it in my head because I read the book
so much. That's the other thing too, is that one point towards the end of the movie when they refer to Dr. Manhattan and Laurie refers to him as Osterman, and I was like, I'm like, did they ever say his full name in the movie yet? And then because in my head I finished the sentence, like I knew who she was talking about, but I there was little things like that I picked up that I was wondering whether I knew because I read the book or if they were in the movie and I just missed them or not. And I think some of them weren't in, and they just, you know, I filled in the blank. Whether or not they're crucial to the movie, they're probably not, but, you know.
Well, it's like the newsstand guy and the kid. They were there, but no one would ever know the difference,
right,
you know.
And so.
They don't need to be there, really.
No, it's fine. You know what I thought that I – to be completely honest, you know, the choices that they made to fit it into this – to fit it into that box of being a movie, I thought we're all in all very good. There was some skipping around of when things happen with like when Dr. Manhattan left. Like he – you know, in the book he doesn't go to Mars straight then. He transports everybody else all to the parking lot.
Right.
And then he hangs around for a little bit.
Well, yeah, there are little things like that, and I was disappointed to see that Lori didn't have her bag and the perfume throw didn't happen, and so, you know, but like that didn't need to, you know.
Basically, a lot of the things that were cut out, I thought were very wise, you know, intelligently cut out. I was like, okay, this makes sense to fit it all in there. And really, you know, the question is the comic book unfilmable? And the answer is no. The comic was really not unfilmable. That was a monumental task.
To the point of with the you know, like the Golden Age characters, like they looked ridiculous, but I thought it totally worked. Their costumes and everything.
Yep.
Which is funny because other than Ozymandias and Night Owl, every costume in the book was straight, or in the movie was straight out of the book.
Yep.
Again,
well, Silk Spectre's was different.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was a little more latex.
She didn't wear the lacy stuff, but yeah. I liked the translation. I loved the beginning sequence. I loved the whole the stylized version of the old guys before we came the new one. It was good. I'm really looking forward to the bonus materials. I already ordered the DVD with the Black Freighter and the Hollis Mason documentary. And
nice.
You know, I really enjoyed it. I liked it, but I need to see it again to see how much of it is emotional.
Yeah, I'm going Thursday at midnight actually, and I want to see it with a ravenous crowd, you know, more so than the crowd that I was with, and then also try to separate myself from what I know of it.
Well, we can knock you on the head so you forget about the book. Let's talk about the ending.
Okay. So it's been documented and in the press, and everyone knows that Zack Snyder hates the squid. And
he doesn't hate the squid.
I know. But the ending does not – the attack on the cities is not a giant alien squid.
Well, they couldn't do that without doing another hour of backstory filling in how this would work. So they basically made it
– taken to an island and blah, 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 blah.
And so in order to make it simple, he just has him – Ozymandias frames Dr. Manhattan as being the person who attacks Earth. And – it was okay. I mean, it was still somewhat convoluted, but mostly because I'm used to the other ending. So in my head, the other ending was being set up, and then this other thing happened. So I wonder.
They both
how
have slight. I mean,
the other one was convoluted as well. So it's not like it more convoluted.
It was. The only thing about this ending is I thought, like, it doesn't seem like a lasting piece. Because, you know, either, you know, Manhattan becomes a pariah and like, never shows up again, in which case eventually people will stop worrying about him and all of that will be for nothing, or B, like he has to keep making appearances every once in a while to scare people into staying together.
What I thought was interesting, that it's essentially the same ending as The Dark Knight. That they gave, that the world needed something to fear.
Sort of.
Yeah. I mean, except for the Dark Knight's, you know, Batman's going to stick around Gotham and all that kind of stuff. But basically, they positioned it so that the peace will happen as long as they think Dr. Manhattan is watching them and might attack again.
Right.
I thought the final scene with Rorschach was just as compelling in the movie than it was as the book. He totally nailed that.
Let me ask you this. Anybody have any physiological effects from that?
Because
I didn't tear, but I slightly felt like I might, but I didn't quite get there.
I didn't. I'm not a sociopath.
And I was waiting for it because I knew that he at some point he was going to like break, and I was really waiting for it, and I thought he really delivered that.
Yeah, no, he did. He did a good job there. There was something else with the end that I can't remember. Oh, well.
I thought they blew the line about creating a new life. I thought that line was just thrown – that line was skirted right over quickly. It didn't have the power it should have had. In the book, it always seemed so ominous.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I guess that depends on how you take it because you notice it. The thing is, it's not read. You read it a certain way in your mind. They just didn't read it the same way you –
Clearly didn't direct this film. If I had directed this film, there would have been a beat in between the two lines.
Right. And so therefore it's wrong.
Therefore, Zack Snyder can suck it.
He sucks. I thought Crudup was better than I expected.
Yes.
Yep.
A couple of reasons. At first I heard his voice and I thought it didn't work. And then while I was watching this, I was like, it did. And B, I thought the penis was much less distracting than I figured it would be.
Oh, yeah. It totally wasn't distracting at all. It looked a lot like the book.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah. It did, yeah.
So, I didn't look directly at it for a long period of time or anything.
you yelled up to the projectionist. Can you pause that? Mental calculations. Wow, but he's doing well. Was that like? Was he in like a muscle suit, or is he actually?
He was green suited.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah. Really. Billy Crudup's barely in the movie, actually.
Well, so is Jackie Earle Haley. He's, you know, you only see his face for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Man, but when you did, like the scene with him and the place that I thought that he, like the scene with him and the psychiatrist.
Yeah.
Was just amazingly well done. I was so like, it was right there, that dead stare that they describe and everything.
He was so good in this. I agree with Ron that everybody was really good, but he was a bit above everyone else. And he was
like,
so amazing.
Look at him. He just looked like he looked like Kovacs. I was like, wow.
Yeah. He did.
The other little nitpick I had was you couldn't read his sign.
Yes, you could. It drove me crazy. And I knew what it said, but you couldn't read it. Yes.
Yeah.
I love that he was there so often, though.
Yeah.
Every time he showed up, I giggled a little to myself. I know.
I thought Moloch was good.
He was good. Yeah, I don't remember his ears being so extreme.
No, yeah, they were. Yeah.
They were at the point in the book.
They're pointing in the book, yeah.
Matt Frewer. Axe Hedrum.
Matt Frewer, yeah, no, good. Great casting.
You know what was great casting? I noticed, like, the thing that stands out is the two cops.
Yes, they were. They were really good.
That's perfect.
Yeah, anyway. The more I talk about it to you guys, the more I think I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, shit.
But nothing else it does, it also makes me realize, you know, because I just read the book a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know, it's still, you know, it didn't infest the experience of reading the book at all. You know what I mean?
It puts to rest the silly idea that the movie would somehow hurt the book.
Right.
No,
totally,
I know.
Yeah.
One of the things I don't like the idea, though, of having like having a pre-established voice in your head, but since I'd already been familiar with it, that's not going to happen, you know?
Right.
But I thought that they did a pretty good job of picking what those voices would be.
Oh, yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, Rorschach's voice in the movie is the one that's in my head. Like, it's weird.
It's a little different, but it's the same idea.
Well, you don't know what's in my head.
No, on mine. I was just...
Although I was disappointed that we got more of a guttural Herm than Herm.
I thought the Herm was fucking excellent.
Yes.
That was when he did it, I was like, oh, that was good.
Yeah.
That was really, really good. It was one time where he did it, and I was like, it doesn't fit there. But other than that, I think it was during the cop fight. But like he used it as an exasperation.
Yeah. No, it was really good. It was really good. I gotta give it. I give it two thumbs up. A+. I think it was really good.
I think we might have to come back and do this again when the DVD comes out because it'll almost be a different film.
Yeah, I think we should. It was good. It was really good. So, wow.
4 hours.
Yeah. So if you like the movie, you might want to check out two things that we got coming on that we have on iFanboy and coming on iFanboy. If you go to ifanboy.com/store, you can buy your very own Herm T-shirt. I gotta admit, sales have they've been selling steadily, but we've noticed a dramatic increase this week as the movie's coming out. So it's limited quantity. So make sure you get to ifanboy.com/store, buy it while you can.
Some sizes already sold out.
Yeah, exactly. So also, you want to check out this past Wednesday, our video show, where we talked all about the Watchmen book, the everything you need to know about the graphic novel. If you haven't read it, or if you have read it and you want to celebrate it a little, go to ifanboy.com or revision3.com/ifanboy. You can watch it there. And on this upcoming Wednesday, next week on the video show, we have our coverage from WonderCon, the convention in San Francisco, where we spoke to pretty much the entire cast, except for Nancy Boy.
Matthew Good wasn't there.
Matthew Good was not there, but we talked to Zack Snyder, Dave Gibbons, the entire cast, Jackie O'Haley, Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Who else, Ron?
Malin Ackerman, whatever her name is, and the other dude, Night Owl.
Patrick Wilson. I'll never forget.
Yeah, I'll never forget that. So if you dig the movie, you're going to want to watch both those shows.
Yes.
Anyway. Pretty awesome. Anyway. So that was, God, that must have been the most, no, I don't know if it was the most positive, but I guess it's definitely in that camp.
Dark Knight would be up there too.
I got to tell you, I will be shocked to hear if people come out of this, you know, with much wrong with it. You can sort of not like it, I guess, but, you know, there's not much to nitpick about.
I think if people are looking to nitpick, they'll find stuff.
Yeah, that's
yeah, totally. Yeah, of course they will. They're going to tear it apart, yeah.
If they're determined to nitpick it, they'll find the way to do it. What's interesting is last year we had, eight or nine of these movies, and we sort of hit the high point in the middle, whereas this year I think this is it. We got Wolverine, and then we've got Whiteout, and that's
no, I think sure. The Avengers movie coming up.
No, this year.
Just for this year? Oh, I thought you meant this is it, like, forever. Oh, okay, gotcha.
No, not forever. Yeah, now we're all going to die. No.
Well, G.I. Joe. We got G.I. Joe. It's a comic movie. So, all right. So, if you like this discussion, head over to ifanboy.com where you can read all about all of our writings about comic books and that sort of thing. And if you have any questions, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or call us on the voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. We'd love to hear what you think of The Watchmen. Please let us know what you think. There's going to be a post up on the site on ifanboy.com where you can discuss it with all the other iFan base to see whether who hated it and who liked it.
This movie was bloody.
It was bloody.
And sexy.
I can't believe talking about it made me like it more. Who knew?
That'll happen. Then you go back in and watch it and go, those guys were wrong. I hate this.
This sucks. This is Joel Schumacher all over again.
let's not go crazy.
Yeah. Oh, the Snow Night Owl costume was there. I was very happy.
Yes. Imagine how bad it could have been. For anybody who has problems, imagine how bad it could have been.
Yeah. That's what I thought, too, is all those other versions we heard about or saw the scripts for would have been a disaster. I mean, this is... Yeah. On a disaster scale, this is very, very, very low, if at all on the scale.
It's in fact not a disaster, unless no one goes to see it.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Well, the economy, you know.
Movies do well. Anyway, I think that's all that we have to say on the subject. So, thank you. I'm Josh.
I'm Ron.
I'm Connor. I'm Connor, damn it, Herm.
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 Stand before the Lord of Song.